Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. There is a lot happening of importance this week, not only here in East County, but across our nation. A prominent local Republican, El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, has announced plans to run against Congressman Duncan Hunter, joining a growing field of candidates vying for the 50th congressional seat amid controversies and scandals embroiling Hunter. Although Wells shares many of Hunter's conservative values, there are also some clear differences in their backgrounds and views. We'll have a report on Wells' record and excerpts from his press conference announcing his candidacy on today's show. The mass school shooting in Florida has galvanized students to take action by leading a March for Our Lives nationwide. President Donald Trump has proposed some steps to address gun violence, but critics contend they don't go far enough. Meanwhile, California Senator Dianne Feinstein took to the Senate floor to excoriate her colleagues and fight for her new legislation to address the growing number of mass murders committed with assault weapons since a ban on those weapons that she authored was allowed by Congress to expire. Hear what she had to say on today's show. The Supreme Court also took action on a gun case this week, upholding a California gun law, and we'll have details. So how cold was it this week in East County? The winter chill set records in our mountain areas, and we'll tell you all about it. In La Mesa, the city has hired an independent investigator to look into the use of force against a student at Helix High School by a La Mesa Police School resource officer. County supervisors have drawn criticism for refusing to hold a budget hearing at a time when working residents can attend. Today we'll also tell you about firefighters who made a heroic rescue of a disabled senior citizen from a burning building in La Mesa. Plus, we have sad news about the passing of Sergeant Don Parker, who led the Sheriff's Volunteer Search and Rescue Team, saving many lives through the years before losing his own to brain cancer. On the second half of our show today, hear about all the most fun festivals and events coming up on Destination East County, from a St. Patrick's Day fun run through El Cajon to art shows, concerts, Spring Harp Fest, a bunny train, Julian Gold Rush Days, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, the upcoming opening of Cajon Classic Cruises, and many more festive happenings. On our health report, hear why health officials are concerned about an alarming number of flu deaths locally. Plus, learn about ticks found locally with rabbit fever or tularemia and what you should know to protect yourself. Then on Crime Beat, hear about suspects wanted for shooting at a vehicle owner in La Mesa who found them stealing his pickup truck. And finally, learn about a community garden soon to take root in Lemon Grove. Stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery reporting from El Cajon. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells has announced his candidacy in the 50th Congressional District this week, challenging embattled fellow Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter. Wells says he stands for conservative values, as he enumerated in his announcement.
So here's what I stand for. I stand for limited government, the Constitution, the sanctity of life, property rights, a strong national defense, and a secure border. I will be dedicated in my time in Washington to reduce the national debt, to reject tax increases, and unburden workers and small business owners to realize their full potential. Right here in El Cajon, we're experiencing some of the largest economic growth we've seen in a generation. And that's because as mayor, I helped facilitate a tax decrease, which was the only decrease any city did in the state in 2016.
Wells also drew a clear contrast between himself and the Hunter dynasty, the congressman and former congressman of the same name, speaking candidly about his own underprivileged past and struggles to rise out of poverty.
My dream is to serve the people of the 50th with honor, dignity, and hard work. I know that I face a strong incumbent, and I'm up for the challenge. Because my life has been all about impossible dreams and challenges that I've had to conquer over and over again. You know, I might be the most least likely person to be running for Congress. I was not born into a wealthy or politically powerful family. I did not go to Ivy League schools. I in no way had the right pedigree to be running for Congress. In fact, nothing about my start in life suggests that I would be standing before you today, a man of faith, a doctor of psychology, an owner of a business, and the mayor of El Cajon. You see, my family legacy was more likely to become an alcoholic. The struggle for every dollar, the struggle for every meal, to never realize my full potential. And sadly, that was the case for my father. I was 8 years old when a police officer came to my door and told me that my father had taken his own life. He had finally succumbed to his battle with alcoholism. From then on, I lived with the shame of that and the perceived shame that I had for living in poverty.
Bill Wells overcame that stigma of his past, getting his first job at age 16 delivering newspapers, then working at Jack in the Box before going to college as a means to escape poverty, and ultimately getting his doctoral degree in psychology. His troubles didn't end there, though. His first marriage ended in divorce, and Wells wound up as a single father with sole custody of two children, who he raised alone in his studio apartment while working a graveyard shift at a hospital. He spoke of finding faith in the church, where he met his current wife, Betty, whom he praised as a saint. He became an advocate for a hospital and later was appointed planning commissioner in El Cajon. In 2008, he was elected to the city council, where he was appointed interim mayor after the resignation of Mark Lewis. Then in 2014, Wells won election as mayor with 83% of the vote. As mayor, he's drawn praise by leading the city through tough economic times, bringing new car dealerships into El Cajon to raise the tax base, and for overseeing approval of a deal just reached with Live Nation to reopen the East County Performing Arts Center. But he's drawn controversy for a temporary ban on feeding the homeless in public parks during the hepatitis outbreak, and for leading opposition to California's sanctuary state measure that aims to protect undocumented immigrants. El Cajon, however, unlike other East County cities, has also taken steps to help the homeless, funding shelters and resources aimed at getting people off of the streets. One issue that Wells has a passion for is helping people with mental illnesses. Here's what he has to say.
I've also spent my life working with the mentally ill, and I feel that Washington has ignored this issue for far too long now. This also encompasses the massive associated problems of drug addiction and homelessness. I believe I can help the 50th Congressional District be recognized at the national level for the positive, important changes that we will enact. I prize honesty, hard work, determination, and family. I have found that the tough times of my life have made the joyful ones that much more sweeter. I'm grateful for every step that I've made that has brought me to this moment today. It's my deeply held belief that holding public office is one of the greatest, most important jobs in America and should be treated with reverence. And I find it so incredibly American that even a kid like me, from a broken home, from an impoverished family, can dare to dream the dream of serving in Washington. And if you elect me to the 50th Congressional District, I will not let you down. My name is Bill Wells, and I ask for your vote for Congress in June.
Wells says he's fulfilled many impossible dreams already in his life and now hopes to attain one more if he wins election to Congress. He says he knows he faces a strong incumbent in Hunter, who in the past has won re-election by large margins. He also faces two well-funded Democrats in the primary race, former Navy SEAL and Hamuld Azura School Board trustee Josh Butner and Amar Campanajar, a former Obama administration Labor Department official and Hispanic Chamber of Commerce representative. Both are amassing large campaign chests to challenge Hunter. There are also lesser-known candidates in both parties and still a possibility of other big names jumping into the race before the March 9th filing deadline. The top two vote-getters, regardless of party, in the June primary will square off in November. While some have speculated that Hunter might choose not to run for re-election, on Tuesday he released a written statement making clear that neither Wells' candidacy nor the FBI investigation have dissuaded him. Hunter states, "I'm a Marine who was elected to represent my constituents in Congress. Wells and others are politicians. Politicians are constantly running for higher office. That's what they do." The congressman adds, I fight for my beliefs and principles every day, and that's what I will keep doing, no matter how many politicians run against me. Democrats, buoyed by victories in other states where Republicans were considered to have safe margins, are pouring massive resources into the 50th Congressional District in hopes of flipping the balance of power in the Republican-controlled Congress. Republican Party Chairman Tony Krivorek recently tweeted that the party stands behind Hunter, adding that if Democrats think they can win the 50th District, quote, they must be smoking something.
Students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, have a message for lawmakers and the national media in the wake of a mass shooting that killed 17 people on their campus last week. Emma Gonzalez, a student at the school, told CNN, "We are going to be the kids you read about in textbooks, not because we're going to be another statistic about mass shooting in America." She adds, "We are going to be the last mass shooting." Teenagers from the school have announced that they will lead a nationwide demonstration on March 24th called the March for Our Lives. You can sign up to join or lead a march in your community at www.marchforourlives.com. The marches will be held not only in Washington, D.C., but in cities across the nation, calling on Congress to enact gun control measures, including reinstating a ban on assault-style weapons and purchase of large-capacity ammunition magazines. 11th grader Cameron Kasky told ABC News, "We are going to be marching together as students, begging for our lives." He says the message for America's adults is that young people's lives are on the line, adding, "At this point, you are either with us or against us." The students plan to expose politicians who have taken large contributions from the National Rifle Association, or NRA, while voting against measures to reduce gun violence. Kasky believes there should be a badge of shame associated with every politician who takes NRA money and then opposes legislation to restrict access to weapons such as the AR-15, the gun used by shooter Nicholas Cruz in the Florida campus killings, as well as in many other mass shootings, such as the massacre at a concert in Las Vegas. Gun access wasn't the only issue in the Florida killing. The FBI has admitted that it failed to follow protocol by not following up on numerous tips reporting Cruz's violent social media posts threatening harm to blacks, Mexicans, and gays. Mental health concerns are also issues in this, as in many other recent shooting massacres, and addressing such problems may help prevent future killings. But the single biggest action to save lives that students are calling for is restrictions on access to military-style assault weapons and the large-capacity ammunition magazines. A bill by California Senator Dianne Feinstein was passed by Congress and signed into law in 1994, but in 2004, Congress repealed the ban. The Washington Post reports that during the 10 years the ban was in effect, the number of gun massacres dropped by 37%, and the number of people killed in mass shootings fell 43%. After the ban was repealed by Congress, the number of gun massacres shot up by 183%, and the number of gun massacre deaths skyrocketed by 239% nationwide. Refusing to reinstate the ban is at odds with public opinion. A poll last year by Pew Research found that 68% of all adults support banning assault weapons and 65% support banning high-capacity magazines. Nearly half, 48% of gun owners even agreed that such bans should be supported, a Quinnipiac poll in 2017 found. America is the only nation with such a high rate of mass murders involving guns. The common denominator in most countries where gun massacres are virtually unheard of is limits on ownership of certain types of guns. But opponents of gun restrictions insist that the Second Amendment to the Constitution, which protects Americans' right to bear arms, means unfettered access to every sort of gun. Reform advocates argue that times have changed, noting that when the Constitution was written, guns were single-loading muskets and that the Founding Fathers envisioned a well-trained militia, not lone wolf gunmen committing mass murder. Moreover, the Constitution once allowed slavery and prohibited women from voting, all things that later generations decided to change. After every mass shooting, voices calling for reform have arisen, but thus far, all have been shot down by the Republicans in Congress who have blocked all efforts at even gun reforms. Instead, they have supported bills to expand access to guns instead of limiting access. For instance, Congress passed a measure in December authored by Congressman Duncan Hunter that would allow gun owners with concealed carry permits to legally carry concealed guns in every state, even places such as California that have sharply limited carrying concealed weapons. Students from Parkland, Florida, and their peers across the nation hope that this time things will be different, with social media mobilizing an army of young people armed with cell phones, Instagram, and YouTube accounts. They're attracting some high-profile support, too. Movie star George Clooney and his wife just announced that they will donate $500,000 to the Parkland Students March for Our Lives. The March for Our Lives website states, "Every kid in this country now goes to school wondering if this day might be their last. We live in fear." But the site concludes, "It doesn't have to be this way. Change is coming, and it starts now. Inspired by and led by the kids who are our hope for the future. The young voices will be heard." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Last October, a shooter at a Las Vegas concert massacred 58 people and injured 851 more. He used a bump stock to alter a legal weapon to mimic an automatic rapid-fire weapon. In December, President Donald Trump asked the Justice Department and Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to review federal regulations on bump stock devices. The comment period for that review closed in late January. On Tuesday, Trump announced that he has signed a memo directing the Attorney General to propose regulations that, quote, ban all devices that turn legal weapons into machine guns. Speaking on the Senate floor on February 16th, California Senator Dianne Feinstein denounced the Senate's inaction on bump stocks, as well as other proposed reforms, such as broader background checks for gun purchases and reinstating the assault weapons ban. She urged the Republican-controlled Senate that has blocked all such measures to pass bump stock legislation, stating, "Nobody wants automatic weapons on our streets, but Congress has shown no inclination to take action." Now it appears President Trump plans to take action to ban bump stock through executive action, whether or not Congress passes a bill to do so. The Firearms Policy Coalition, or FPC, a gun rights group, denounced Trump's announced action as executive fiat. In a press release, the group states, "Today's order makes clear that the Trump administration will leave FPC and law-abiding gun owners no choice but to seek a judicial remedy." The statement also says, "If the Republican-held House and Senate and President Donald Trump choose to act on new gun control over the pro-gun rights legislation that the American people were promised in 2016, they will have shown the voters that neither major political party cares about their rights or the Constitution, and that's the only real civil option left is a new constitutional amendment." A constitutional amendment to expand gun rights in the current climate seems unlikely, however, given recent polls that show that more than two-thirds of Americans favor at least some restrictions on guns, such as broader background checks. Another proposal is to raise the age limit for buying assault weapons to 21 years old nationwide. Ironically, in most states, the age limit to buy a handgun is 21, but assault rifles such as the AR-15 used in many recent mass shootings can be purchased at 18 years of age. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, asked if the president might support raising the federal age limit to buy assault weapons, replied, "I think that's certainly something that's on the table for us to discuss," CNN confirms. After meeting with students from the Parkland, Florida high school where the latest mass shooting occurred, Trump also called for financial incentives for trained teachers willing to carry guns, a proposal that NPR reports has been promoted by Russian operatives on social media. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
The gunman who killed 17 people at a school in Parkland, Florida, purchased a military-style AR-15 assault rifle legally. He is 19 years old. In most states, buying a handgun is illegal for anyone under age 21. Yet it's legal to buy an assault weapon at age 18, when many students are still high school seniors. Now, California Senator Dianne Feinstein wants to change that. So she's introduced a bill to raise the age to 21 years old nationwide for buying assault weapons. Feinstein calls the current policy dangerous and says that it makes no sense. If you can't buy a handgun or a bottle of beer, you shouldn't be able to buy an AR-15, she states. Feinstein was the author of a ban on assault gun sales that was the law for a decade before Congress allowed the bill to expire and failed to reauthorize it in 2004. Republicans in Congress have refused to allow legislation to reinstate the ban to have hearings, so Feinstein, a Democrat, is trying a more narrow approach. While not fully automatic, assault-style weapons commonly used by mass shooters are still deadly, capable of fire up to 45 rounds per minute, according to the manufacturer's claims. The National Rifle Association estimates that some 5 million AR-15 guns are currently in circulation, with hundreds of thousands more being made each year, the Washington Post reports. On February 15th, Feinstein spoke on the Senate floor to offer sympathy to victims of the Florida high school shooting and their families. But she told her Senate colleagues,
"Today, grief and sorrow on our part is really not adequate, because for the past 25 years, I have seen this committee do exactly that and do nothing to put to a stop the weapons of war that are sold all across our land to virtually all comers. Those precious lives snuffed out by a 19-year-old former student at the same high school, armed with an AR-15 and multiple high-capacity ammunition magazines. I gather he had his own lockbox in his own room and kept his own modified weapon of war. I want everybody to know we've been here before, and it's horrifying to think of the lives that are lost every day to gun violence while we sit here in Congress."
Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Fistier.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is Gene Carpenter. The U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear a challenge by gun rights advocates to California's law requiring a 10-day cooling-off period before buying a new gun. The Cal Guns Foundation's lawsuit contended that the waiting period violates the Second Amendment and is also unreasonable since it applied even to people who already own other guns. A lower court agreed, but an appeals court rejected those claims, and now the Supreme Court has allowed the appellate decision upholding California's law to stand. The decision in the case, Sylvester v. Becerra, wasn't even close. It takes four of the nine justices to agree to hear a case. Only Justice Clarence Thomas dissented and wanted to hear the case. Even other conservatives on the high court refused to intervene. Thomas blasted his fellow justices, claiming that they would likely have intervened had a waiting period been required for any other protected right. In his dissent, Justice Thomas wrote, "The right to keep and bear arms is apparently this court's constitutional orphan. The fact that the High Court has a mixed record on gun issues, striking down bans on private possession of handguns in Chicago and Washington, D.C. as unconstitutional, but leaving other decisions regarding guns up to the states, such as banning assault weapons, requiring trigger locks, and regulating carrying of guns in public places. California is one of eight states to require waiting periods for gun purchases. The statute is intended to prevent deadly crimes committed in anger, mandating time for reflection before a gun may be legally purchased."
This is Meridian Broaddus with a weather report. Frigid weather across our region caused closure of schools in the Julian and Warner Springs areas earlier this week, with a frost warning issued across the inland region Monday and Tuesday nights. The cold front brought record low temperatures, according to the National Weather Service. Ramona dipped to a chilly 23 degrees Tuesday in East County's mountains, while even coastal Oceanside had near freezing temperatures at 35 degrees. Gusty winds resulted in a wind chill factor of just 8 degrees atop Mount Laguna, and Julian received a late winter dusting of snow. Sunny skies are forecast for Saturday with partial clouds on Sunday. However, below average temperatures are forecast to continue through next week, the National Weather Services predicts.
The city of La Mesa has hired an outside investigator to determine whether a La Mesa police officer violated any departmental policies or procedures in a use of force incident at Helix Charter High School. A video that went viral on social media showed the officer knocking a handcuffed female student to the ground after she allegedly attempted to run away. The girl, reportedly a straight-A student, had been tardy, and when a teacher asked to search her backpack, pepper spray was found that is not allowed on campus, so the girl was asked to leave, and police were called when she refused. La Mesa City Manager Yvonne Garrett and City Attorney Glenn Sabine signed an agreement with Barry Ananag of BA Investigations to conduct the independent review. According to a profile on LinkedIn, Ananag is a retired police executive who served 30 years in law enforcement, including police commander for the city of Irvine and interim deputy police chief for the city of Westminster. According to a statement released by La Mesa, Ananag is an experienced investigator who has investigated a variety of cases ranging from allegations of discrimination, harassment, and retaliation to allegations of violations of city or department policy. It is unclear whether his experience includes investigating use of force allegations, and, if so, whether his findings were in favor of police departments or those raising challenges. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
If you work during weekdays and can't get time off, four of the five San Diego County supervisors don't believe you should have an opportunity to testify in person on the county's proposed budget. Supervisor Greg Cox introduced a proposal to hold a special evening meeting on the budget, which the county has done in the past, to allow working people to participate in the process. But this time, Supervisor Bill Horn complained, "I don't want to sit here at night." Supervisor Kristen Gaspar, the newest member of the board, blames Service Employees International Union for supporting an evening meeting for its members and other working people to attend. Gaspar, who is running for the congressional seat that Darrell Issa will vacate through retirement, noted that technology has enabled online comments to be submitted. But delivering opinions on the county budget through in-person testimony to your elected officials is now an option only for those able to go downtown during business hours, since Supervisor Cox was unable to muster up any support from his colleagues on the board, the San Diego Union Tribune reports. That could change, however, as early as next year. Four of the five aging supervisors have served together on the board for decades, but due to term limits enacted by county voters, two of the supervisors will be forced off the board after the elections this November, and two more will step down after voters cast ballots in 2020. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Firefighters from Heartland Fire and Rescue, aided by the San Diego Fire Department, saved an elderly disabled man from a burning apartment building Tuesday night in La Mesa. Crews responded to the blaze on La Mesita Place after receiving reports of black smoke coming from underneath an apartment door with an elderly couple inside. The fire was in the living room of their downstairs unit. Firefighters searched the apartment and found an elderly man in a back bedroom. He was conscious, breathing, and able to communicate with firefighters, but could not walk due to a prior medical condition, according to Captain Sonny Segura, public information officer for Heartland Fire and Rescue. Firefighters rescued the man, carrying him outside, where an ambulance transported him to a hospital for evaluation. Crews were able to contain the fire within 5 minutes. Cause of the fire has not yet been determined. However, damage to the structure and contents is estimated at $100,000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Meridian Broadus.
Sergeant Don Parker, who saved many lives as head of the San Diego County Sheriff's Search and Rescue Operations for 8 years, died on February 14th after battling glioblastoma, an aggressive form of brain cancer, which he was diagnosed last May. Under Parker's leadership, the all-volunteer search and rescue team had a 98% success rate finding missing children and adults at risk. He also headed up some high-profile searches that ended up in tragic discoveries, including the cases of murdered teens Chelsea King and Amber Dubois. He met his wife, Missy, during a tireless search for her own missing son, Mickey Guidry, who vanished in Ocotillo Wells in November 2009. Mickey has never been found, so for Missy, suffering a second tragic loss has been devastating. Missy Parker posted news of her husband's passing on social media last Wednesday, Valentine's Day. "You said that if you could have a superpower, it would be the ability to fly," she wrote. "You are free now to fly wherever you'd like." Her post concludes, "I will love you forever." Sheriff Bill Gore issued a statement which reads, "The sheriff and our entire department has Don Parker's family in our thoughts and prayers during this difficult time," adding that the department will work with Parker's wife to honor his legacy. Parker worked for the sheriff's department for 25 years, including on patrol, in the jails and courts, as a training deputy on the SWAT team, and for the last 8 years, heading up the search and rescue team where he oversaw a dedicated team of volunteers. Upon Parker's retirement, Sheriff Gore called his ability to motivate 240 dedicated search and rescue volunteers amazing. Sergeant Parker once said of the work that he and others did on the team, "Everybody in the world is here for a purpose," adding that being in search and rescue allows us to make a positive difference. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting this week's Destination East County, which includes Seussical the Musical in Spring Valley's Encore Theater, Hawkwatch in Ramona, the Boots Ball in Borrego Springs, Gregory Page in Concert at Mission Trails, and the St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon in El Cajon.
Plus, we'll have coming attractions, including the Circle of Art in Borrego Springs, Tomato Mania at the Garden, the Alaskan String Band at Croc Center, the Bunny Train at the Campo Depot, Spring Extravaganza at Santee Lakes, Spring Harp Fest in La Mesa, and a night of Laurel and Hardy comedy films in Spring Valley, all in March.
And then in April, you can enjoy the Julian Gold Rush Days, Julian Family Fiddle Camp, Sweet Pea Days, and an antique show at Summers Pass Farms in Flim Springs, Heritage of the Americas Museum's 25th anniversary party, the season opener of Cajon Classic Cruises in El Cajon, and Musical Journeys, a spring concert presented by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Young Actors Theater's presentation of Seussical the Musical continues at the Encore Theater in the Casa de Oro area of Spring Valley this weekend, concluding on Saturday, March 4th. This lively musical production brings to life your favorite Dr. Seuss characters from The Cat in the Hat to Horton the Elephant. For tickets, you can visit yatsandiego.org.
The daughter of a friend of mine is tap dancing in three of the numbers in Advancy Dancy Newlians, Hunches, and Fishes and Wishes.
Wow, that sounds like fun. So, Jonathan, I understand your next event is in Ramona.
Yes, Hawkwatch. The Wildlife Research Institute invites you to Hawkwatch each Saturday in February at 10 a.m. Visitors can see birds of prey such as hawks, eagles, and owls. Sponsored by the Wildlife Research Institute, this year Hawkwatch will be held at Beegent Ranch, a private ranch open only for the Hawkwatch events in the Ramona grasslands. For information, you can visit wildlife-research.org.
And speaking of wild, Jonathan, can you tell us about an event coming up in Anza Borrego that I understand has a very special dress code?
Yes, Desert Dressy for the Boots Ball. You're invited to don your Desert Dressy attire and finest hiking boots for the second annual Boots Ball, hosted by the Anza Borrego Foundation on Saturday, March 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. Guests will enjoy musical entertainment, food, live and silent auctions, and learn about the Foundation's vision for the next 50 years. The guest speaker, Opie Kaufman, is a poet, artist, and advocate for wilderness conservation. The Boots Ball will be held at the Anza Borrego Desert Research Center in Borrego Springs. For tickets and registration for the Boots Ball fundraiser, visit the Anza Borrego Foundation's website at theabf.org.
Yes, and then Gregory Page, an international touring and recording artist, is returning to Mission Trails Regional Park Auditorium for a concert on Sunday, March 4th at 3 p.m. This London-born citizen of the world has imagination and conscience as well as vocal talent. He will share his stunning guitar work, songs of peace, ballads of optimistic melancholy, and in his words, true stories that he makes up, with the Mission Trails listening audience in performance for the whole family. Now, for details, you can visit Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org. Next up, Jonathan, I hear there's a really big St. Patrick's Day coming up a little bit early.
It's never too early to start celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
I agree.
Run East County invites you to take part in the annual St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon, 5K race, and Green Mile through downtown El Cajon on Sunday, March 4th. There's also a Tribes and Clans CrossFit competition, a Tribes and Clans for Kids event, and a beer garden. Participants are encouraged to wear green and participate in a costume contest as you join avid runners and walkers for a morning of fun, all to benefit local East County charities. To register for the St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon race or other events, you can visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Art lovers can view works of over 70 fine artists at the 29th annual Circle of Art Show and Sale on Christmas Circle in Borrego Springs. This popular event will be held Saturday, March 10th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday, March 11th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For tickets and details, you can visit circleofart.org.
Yes, and it's a beautiful time of year to go to the desert, and if you're lucky, with this rain coming in this week, you just might even see some of those desert wildflowers.
Yeah, and speaking of flowers, Miriam, it's time to plant vegetables, and I hear you've got a timely event to help people get started.
We do, Jonathan. Tomato Mania is returning on March 10th and 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College. This famous event features heirloom and hybrid tomato seedlings of every size, shape, color, and taste profile. Planting tomatoes marks the beginning of spring for gardeners, and who can't resist the fresh taste of a garden tomato? You can get expert advice, pick up tools, attend classes, take a tour of the garden, and of course, bring home some tomato seeds and tomatoes. You can also savor some time-honored tomato refreshments. Find more delicious details at thegarden.org.
The Alaska String Band will perform at the Joan B. Kroc Theater on Friday, March 16th. At 7 p.m. to benefit the Alpines Christ the King Episcopal Church. Be entertained by the delightful talent of this family band as they take you on a musical journey filled with the rich sounds of bluegrass and a variety of timeless American classics, while widescreen images portray the beauty of Alaska to create a visually captivating setting. The Alaska String Band brings the best of Americana. Winners of the Fame Awards Bluegrass Band of the Year, this group has polished and riveting harmonies, offering up American roots favorites, swing, jazz, rock, original, pop, folk, and bluegrass. Highly praised, currently chosen and airing nationwide on PBS to over 80 million viewers, is the Alaska String Band's one-hour musical docudrama, Southeast Alaska Odyssey. Tickets are available online by visiting ChristTheKingAlpine.org.
Wow, that sounds fun, Jonathan. I've actually been to Alaska. That sounds like it would be really interesting.
Yeah, well, Easter's coming up, and I hear the Easter Bunny's coming to town.
Yes, the Easter Bunny will be hopping on board the train at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Depot in Campo on March 24th, 25th, and 31st to visit with passengers as the Bunny Train travels through San Diego's beautiful East County mountains. After enjoying a one-hour journey along 12 miles of track, the train stops at the museum's display building where two Easter egg hunting areas for children have been set up. One of them has eggs in plain sight for young children. The other has eggs carefully hidden in the museum's display building. Now the kids can turn in plastic eggs they find to museum volunteers for sweets and other prizes. For tickets and reservations, you can visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org and click on the Bunny Train option listed under Train Rides. Now, Jonathan, tell us about another egg hunting opportunity coming up, this one in Santee.
Santee Lakes and the City of Santee invite you to a spring extravaganza on Sunday, March 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event includes continuous egg hunts for children age 8 and under, as well as carnival rides, crafts, face painting, pony rides, photos with the Easter Bunny, and more. Tickets are required for some activities. For details, visit SanteeLakes.com.
And yet another event coming up that's spring-related is the Spring Harp Fest in La Mesa. Harmonica players from far and wide will participate in the 19th annual Spring Harp Fest, which will be held on Saturday, March 31st from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa. The lineup of top players and a harmonica jam fest at the event all help to benefit music programs in our local schools. You can also shop for harmonicas and other musical items. For more information, you can visit springharpfest.org. And next up, Jonathan, I understand you've got a comedy event.
Yes, Saps at Sea, the official Laurel and Hardy fan organization of San Diego, continue their festival of fantastic films on Saturday, March 31st at 7 p.m. at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. In the second of five 40th anniversary programs, the Saps will screen another Tex Avery cartoon, followed by the short film comedy Going Bye-Bye. Then Charlie Chase is joined by Thelma Todd in the Mistaken Identity Laugh Fest titled The Pip from Pittsburgh, plus a screening of Blockheads. For more information, you can visit the official Saps at Sea San Diego Facebook page.
Well, that sounds like fun. We can all use a little laughter in our lives nowadays, I think. We've got even more fun festivities coming up in April, starting with the Julian Gold Rush Days on April 7th and 8th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., which celebrates the discovery of gold in this mountain community.
Yeah, Miriam, wasn't the gold discovered right after the Civil War?
It was, after displaced Confederate veterans from Georgia headed west to seek their fortunes, including cousins Drew Bailey and Mike Julian, who settled in beautiful meadows between Vulcan Mountain and the Cuyamacas in what's now known as Julian. And yes, it was named after Mike Julian. In 1870, a cattleman named Fred Coleman dipped his hat in a creek for water for his horse, and he found flecks of gold, prompting San Diego County's first and only gold rush. Now, visitors are invited to come learn more about our local gold rush history with a weekend of entertainment at the Julian Mining Company in Wynola. That's on April 7th and 8th, and it includes gold panning, tomahawk throwing, archery, candle dipping, hay rides, and a lot more. The old-fashioned mining camp will also offer historical reenactors, an arts and crafts market, food and drinks, a petting zoo, pony rides, and plenty of family fun. And for details, you can visit juliangoldrushdays.com. Now, that's not all that's coming up in Julian.
Yes, also in Julian, the famous Julian Family Fiddle Camp offers instruction to all ages April 11th through the 15th at a mountain retreat in Julian. As long as you can play a couple of simple tunes on fiddle, mandolin, guitar, bass, banjo, or cello, you'll find a class for you at the camp that includes local and national level instructors. This year's camp offers classes in Appalachian old-time fiddle and banjo, Texas-style fiddle and backup guitar, bluegrass fiddle, flat pick and rhythm guitar, swing and bluegrass mandolin, progressive jazz fiddle, Celtic-style fiddle, upright bass, cello, band dynamics, harmony vocals, and other specialized workshops. Learn more at familyfiddlecamp.com.
Summer's Past Farms in Flynn Springs, that's just east of El Cajon, invites you to Sweet Pea Day on Saturday, April 14th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can visit a towering sweet pea maze at this event that celebrates the fragrant, old-fashioned flowers in their full glory. Now, you can preview that maze from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and cut your own bouquet starting at 11 a.m. until they're gone, and Take it from me, who's been to this event, that doesn't take long, so I suggest you arrive early if you go. Guests can also enjoy live music with Jim Earp on a shady pavilion, savor snacks at an outdoor coffee bar, or picnic on the grass to round out an idyllic spring day. For more information, you can visit summerspastfarms.com. Now, Jonathan, I understand you're really revved up about the next event.
Vroom, vroom.
The Cajon Classic Cruise will rev up its season opener on Wednesday, April 14th from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. Thousands of people from across the region come to the Cajon Classic Cruise Nights each Wednesday all summer long. In addition to viewing classic vehicles with a different theme each week, visitors can enjoy musical entertainment at Prescott Promenade on Main Street, just east of Magnolia, or arrive early to dine at an outdoor cafe for a roadside view of the Cajon Classic Cruise. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com. Now, Miriam, what's coming up at Cuyamaca College?
I'm glad you asked, Jonathan. Heritage of the Americas Museum is celebrating its 25th anniversary with a special event on Saturday, April 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. featuring guest artist Alfredo Rodriguez. The celebration also features a catered buffet, music, auction, drinks, and good times. And, of course, you can enjoy all of the wonderful exhibits at the museum, which is actually considered one of the finest community college museums in the entire United States. For more information, you can visit heritageoftheamericasmuseum.com.
An antiques and crafts fair will be held at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs on Saturday, April 21st, and Sunday, April 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can view works by over 70 craftsmen and artisans while shopping for crafts, collectibles, antiques, and garden items. For details, visit summerspastfarms.com. Now, Miriam, I understand there's a spring concert by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra based right here in East County.
That's right. And actually, one of our voices you hear on the show sometimes, John Fastier, he's actually a member of this very talented group. It's amazing the work that they do. The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will be presenting its spring concert titled Musical Journeys on April 29th at 3 p.m. in the College Avenue Baptist Church. This year, the program will include John Rutter's Requiem, music from West Side Story, and The Wizard of Oz. For tickets and details, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This is Meridian Broadus with the health report. Health officials are voicing concern over rising fatalities from the flu. More than 250 people have died of the flu in San Diego County so far this season. By contrast, at this time last year, only 44 flu deaths were reported. Those who died from the current flu outbreak range in age from 1 to 101. Most were elderly, but 13% younger than 65. More than 16,000 cases of flu have been confirmed with laboratory testing. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says influenza activity continues to be widespread, and unfortunately, more people are dying from the flu. She says that the predominant strain circulating this season has been influenza H3N2, which has a more severe impact in the elderly and the very young. The number of lab-confirmed flu cases had declined for several weeks, but began to increase 2 weeks ago due to a surge in influenza B, which now accounts for nearly half of cases. Dr. Wooten urges people to get the flu vaccine, which offers protection against influenza A, H3N2, pandemic H1N1, like flu viruses, and influenza B strains. While the region is experiencing a severe flu season, the high number of deaths identified here is also due to the county's broad surveillance rapid reporting systems. The good news is that the number of people showing up at emergency rooms with flu-like symptoms has declined slightly over the past couple of weeks. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that everyone 6 months and older get vaccinated. The vaccine is especially important for people at high risk of developing serious complications from the flu. That includes those age 65 and older, caregivers, and people living with the elderly, pregnant women, and those with chronic medical conditions such as asthma, diabetes, and lung disease, even if symptoms are under control. The flu vaccine is available at doctor's offices and pharmacies. If you don't have medical insurance, you can go to a county public health center to get vaccinated. For a list of locations, visit SDIZ.org or call 211. Health officials also remind the public to wash hands frequently and use hand sanitizers to avoid getting sick. And if you do have symptoms of the flu, please stay home and avoid spreading influenza to others.
This is Jonathan Getz. County health officials are cautioning hikers to protect themselves and their pets from ticks after several ticks along the Lopez Canyon Trail in Sorrento Valley tested positive for tularemia, better known as rabbit fever. Tularemia can be treated with antibiotics, but can cause long-term harm and, in some cases, death. Tick populations are on the rise countywide, and it's unknown whether the disease may be present in other locations. When hiking or walking in grassy or brushy areas along the backcountry, you can protect yourself by wearing hiking boots, light-colored clothing, long pants and long sleeves, and by applying insect repellent. Pets can be protected with products that kill fleas and ticks. Examine your pet after outings and remove any ticks. Also, check your clothing before going indoors and remove any ticks that may have hitched a ride. Tularemia kills rabbits and rodents such as mice, rats, and gophers, so avoid handling dead rabbits and rodents unless you are wearing gloves. Cats are susceptible to tularemia and can transmit the disease to humans, according to the Centers for Disease Control. Treating it with flea and tick repellents can protect both you and your pet. Tularemia can be transmitted not only through tick bites, but also through bites from deer flies, from ingesting water contaminated with the tularemia bacteria, or from inhaling dust containing the organism. If you are bitten by a tick, the county advises using a tweezer to grab it by the head and then carefully pull out the tick. Symptoms of tularemia may include ulcers on the skin and swollen lymph nodes, according to the CDC. Ticks carry not only tularemia, but also other debilitating diseases such as Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which have also been transmitted locally in the past. So taking some simple steps to protect yourself is a good idea, whether or not rabbit fever has been found in your favorite hiking spots.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Fistier with a Crime Beat report. La Mesa police seek public help to locate two suspects wanted for stealing a pickup truck and shooting at the vehicle's owner Tuesday morning, shortly before 4 a.m. The victim called 911 to report that two men had stolen his white 2001 Toyota Tacoma parked on Baldridge Street in La Mesa. He told police that he was alerted to the theft when he heard his dog barking. He said that he went outside and saw the two strangers inside his vehicle. When he confronted them, they tried to flee in his pickup truck. So he opened the driver's door and tried to pull one of the suspects out. One suspect pointed an apparent handgun at the victim, who backed away and heard a gunshot. The thieves drove off in the vehicle, heading north on Kiowa Street. Police found a spent shell casing near where the confrontation occurred. The suspects are both described as Asian men wearing dark clothing. One was short with a thin build. The other was of average height with a heavy build. They are wanted for vehicle theft and assault with a deadly weapon. If you have any information, please call La Mesa Police Department at 619-667-1400. That's 619-667-1400. You may also call Crime Stoppers Anonymous toll-free tip line, 888-580-TIPS, that's T-I-P-S, or make a report online at sdcrimestoppers.com. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000 for information leading to an arrest in this case. Lemon Grove, a community that has its roots in agriculture, will soon be getting a community garden, complete with fresh organic vegetables, an adjacent flower garden, and a butterfly-friendly garden. The City Council has approved a proposal for the Lemon Grove Community Garden Group, a nonprofit organization, to plant the garden at the northeast corner of Central Avenue and Olive Street. The garden will be planted in over 50 raised beds, including 8 that will be accessible for wheelchair gardeners. Water-efficient drip irrigation will be used. The nonprofit group will lease land from the city free for 2 years, while it grows its own funding sources through grants, donations from local businesses, and community memberships. Members will be able to plant and tend their garden plots from dawn to dusk 7 days a week, but must follow certain rules, such as not growing marijuana plants. The organization also plans to partner with Thrive Lemon Grove and Lemon Grove Heal Zone to raise funds. In addition, it has support from San Diego State University's SAGE project, which provided student support last year to research how to set up a community garden for the city, among other potential civic improvements. In its report, the SAGE project stated that by providing Lemon Grove with a dedicated area for residents to get involved and grow their own produce, the city could enable its residents to develop a greater sense of community that helps foster healthier and active lifestyles. Walt Oliwa, spokesman from the Lemon Grove Community Garden Association, told council he expects the garden will be ready for its grand opening this summer. Reporting from Lemon Grove for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The Arbor Day Foundation, in honor of its commitment to effective urban forest management, has named La Mesa a Tree City USA for the 38th consecutive year. La Mesa achieved Tree City USA recognition by meeting the program's 4 requirements: a tree board or department, a tree care ordinance, an annual community forestry budget of at least $2 per capita, and an Arbor Day observance and proclamation. Trees provide multiple benefits to a community when properly planted and maintained. They help improve the visual appearance of a neighborhood, increase property values, reduce home cooling costs, remove air pollutants, and provide wildlife habitat, among other advantages. You can find more information on the program at arborday.org/treecityusa. The Arbor Day Foundation is a million-member nonprofit conservation and education group with a mission to inspire people to plant, nurture, and celebrate trees. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.